Hello and welcome to Where's Shaz, the podcast. I'm Shaz Ahmed and my mission is to empower, educate and inspire you with stories, knowledge and guests in the world of property, finance and business. So let's go. So joining me on the podcast today, I have a couple of well-traveled, well-educated, well-experienced, well-mannered architects and interior designers turned investors. It's the team behind Elite Dwellings, Andrew and Mary, or Mary and Andrew, whichever way. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Shaz. Yeah, thank you for having us.
No drama. Is there a right way to say this? Andrew or Mary and Andrew? Which one's
definitely Andrew and Mary.
To be fair, I was on the website. Every website I've been on, or bit of research, it's always Andrew and Mary. So I guess that's what it is. but guys, yeah, thanks for coming on. The first thing I ask all of my guests to share, and I guess because it's two of you, you'll be individual, is what is your mission statement? You know, why are you doing what it is you're doing?
Yeah, no worries.
I suppose we have two goals, don't we? So
yeah, definitely. We have a personal goal. And I think an ethical goal as well. Do you want to talk about the personal?
Yeah, so our personal goal, as you alluded to in the intro, well-traveled, that's what we live for, traveling the world. That's kind of the reason what drove us into property investing, time and location freedom and stuff like that. So we have just returned from Cyprus, which is our 55th country that we visited. And the aim is to visit every country in the world by the time we're 50. So we've got 13 years to go, and we've got 142 countries to visit. But we've already got another 8 lined up for this year, so we're definitely well on our way.
Well on our way. And I suppose our ethical goal is to... We're both obviously architects, and we have... a real kind of knack, a real want and drive to improve kind of the rental sector and what we believe the rental sector looks like. That's why we have our kind of design side design for investors, because we actually not just want to deliver great houses for our own tenants, but we want to create great houses for everyone across the UK. So we're starting to develop that as well.
Yeah, we just did a review of 2023, obviously, as everyone does at the end of the year, and we worked out we designed 432 HMO rooms and another 35 apartments or houses last year, all that sort of like different levels, interior design, layout and things like that. So we definitely feel like we're hitting that mission. We're definitely making an impact kind of nationally, which is great.
I love that. Just on that point then, just a little bit deeper. So in terms of number of rooms and stuff like that, apart from your own investments, how are you kind of getting leads? How are you lead genning for new clients?
So we get a lot through our socials, so Instagram and Facebook channels, but then we also have a lot of, we're kind of like key partners of a lot of kind of great property communities. So we're partnered with Andy Graham of the HMO community, which is obviously kind of our main playing field, because that's what we specialize in, HMOs. Then we're also have partnerships with Prosperity Network and then The Hive, which is Jade's female property network, isn't it? So we get a lot of good connections through those as well.
Yeah, I think it makes a difference when you're part of a community and you kind of feel the community's spirit and their wants and needs, and you kind of just really get in there. I think, Shaz, you must be the same, being part of the investor community. We're such a big community, but a close-knit community, it feels like. So it feels great to be part of it and to be able to help out.
Absolutely, I agree. This actually was on my list of things to talk about, so let's do it now. I guess communities and mentorships, masterminds and groups, I think there's definitely a big benefit. Like you said, you know, you can be part of a team, you get to know people a lot more in depth, a lot more on a personal level, being part of a community rather than just being, here's a referral, speak to so-and-so. But I do also see sometimes the same people just joining every single community and actually doing much in terms of business. where do you think the happy balance is, and what are the benefits of being part of a community?
Well, I've got an opinion on this. I'm a big believer that you kind of only need like one person to kind of like make that big difference, make that change. You know, it's like one investor is right, and I'm all about going kind of like deep with and kind of more narrow focus rather than kind of like that broad and shallow. I'm not a big fan of the whole kind of like throwing your business cards around a networking event 30 seconds with people and running out of the room. By making stronger, deeper connections with people, you're more likely to get a better relationship out of that and do more business together. And I think we've seen that through the communities that we're in, especially the ones that have like face-to-face meetups, and we're regularly seeing people and interacting with them. They're the ones that we see the most, the most kind of business from and generate the most clients from, rather than the ones that are, maybe a bit more superficial.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I agree as well. And about the business cards, I think 5 years ago, we created some business cards and they're still in that cupboard.
You don't need them these days. Like, if you've got a personality, if it will come to you, you don't need cards. On the topic of cards, I've got one of those tappy cards that you tap on people's phones. I don't know when I used it last, because people are just having real conversations and not tapping for business. But guys, as I was doing my research, because I have done a little bit of research, to be honest, is the one thing that came up a lot was the country of Australia. So what has that been as part of your journey?
Oh, it was an early part of my journey, really. I think it was 2015, we were both in corporate jobs and we're both, working as architects. And I used to work till about midnight, I think, a lot of nights in my job. And we kind of were a little bit sick of it. So we both quit our jobs, and obviously we both love to travel. So we went traveling for a year to see lots of different countries and cultures and experiences. And we did land at the end in Australia, and decided to stay there for 2 years. And it's just beautiful, a standard of living, isn't it? Yeah. it's just a really good lifestyle and a really good standard of living out there. So we absolutely loved it, didn't we?
Yeah.
And I think whilst we were out there, we started to read kind of outside of our normal reading books, and started to read the Rich Dad Poor Dad and the 4-Hour Work Week, etc. And then the penny dropped when we realised we should invest in property, and we came back.
And you came back. Exactly.
Skill sets of...
Yeah, no, I love that. I think the 4-Hour Work Week, brilliant book, but I think he needs to do another version of it based on today's times, because there's so much more that can be done right now off the back of that book, I think. So guys, obviously you work as a team, and you're both designers and architects, but is there set roles within the business, like who does what and how does that work?
Yeah, we learned that very early on. There was a cool moment where I was sat at the desk and Mary sat at the dining table, and Mary was like, right, I've done this job. And I was like, oh, I'm halfway through doing that job. And we were literally sat there doing exactly the same thing at the same time, and we just didn't even realize. And so that was very quick, like, right, we need distinct kind of roles and responsibilities in the business. And I think it's a really important thing to do with, if you're working with your own, your life partner, or even just a business partner, having those roles and responsibilities, because there's an accountability piece to it as well. And that's not in a negative sense of wanting to have a go at someone if something's not done, but it's just clear who is.
Have a go at your partner when it's not done.
It's just clear.
Just say it.
It's clear who is meant to be doing it. So if something isn't done, you know who was meant to do it, and there's no looking at each other wondering.
Who should have done it. So we've kind of early on realized that we need to split the different things that we do. So Andrew does all the acquisition, so he with our VA, admin VA, he does all the acquisition, site finding and all the rest of it, and I do all the lettings, Neither of us wanted to do the lettings. but perhaps I was, you know, I was a little bit more mellow. a little bit more approachable. So I took that on the chin and I took the lettings side of things. So I met again with another VA. We kind of look after the letting side of everything. And then once we established our design business, you took the architectural side of it, you know, the boring side of it. And I took the fun side of it, which was the interior side of it.
Well, speaking of fun, I know Andrew does the TikToks as well. I want a new TikTok account. See, Andrew does that.
Yeah, I'm in charge of all the social media.
So
that is my face. And when you talk to people, when you're messaging us, that's who you're speaking to. Everyone always thinks they're speaking to Mary, but they're speaking to me.
I do come on sometimes and create disruption.
Mary likes to come on, message a load of people, and then literally it's almost like delete the app from her phone. So I'm getting all these responses. Like, who have you been talking to? Anyway.
I love that. Guys, just go a bit deeper in terms of working together, because I think maybe it's important for me to understand, like, some people work alone, some people have a business partner. Obviously with you guys, you know, you're obviously a couple as well. So how do you avoid, or do you not avoid, maybe taking the business home? That you have a case of, look, when we're at the house, we don't talk business, or do you segment that in any way? What advice would you give people who are working together in that way?
It's definitely something we're
working on.
Yeah, still working on. Yes. It's been something we've struggled with. I suppose it can be quite all-consuming. And while we don't, we're not very kind of on every day, we have a cut-off time where we stop and things like that. We're not very good at that. But we do have moments where we know, like, right, this weekend we're going away for the weekend and we'll switch off and we'll stop. Or tonight, you know, we're going to stop working and we're going to
have a date night,
stick a film on. And, you know, we when we do say, right, we're having a break and we're good at doing that, but on a regular, like, everyday occurrence, closing the laptops at 6 o'clock and stuff, that's
harder to do, isn't
it? Harder to
do. Because we're all in on it.
Well, yeah, it's your business, it's your life, and you've got everything going on, and then you see each other all the time as well. So I can imagine it's more difficult than having just a business partner. You're also life partners, so there's that added kind of thing on, right? Cool. Guys, if I was to ask you individually as well, because, you know, two individual people, to define what good design is or looks like, what would you say?
Your background isn't bad.
Oh, this is from The Range.
Very nice.
And this is like 20 pound sheet.
Oh, very nice, very nice.
I like it.
for those who are on the podcast and can't see Shaz's background, he's got some lovely timber paneling and then a green wall on the other side and a planter. So it looks very nice.
Yes. Is that good design?
love it. No, I think there's a few aspects to consider when you are considering good design, and we actually did a little workshop with the Hive with about this a couple of months ago. So it was really nice for us to kind of go through it, and it's quite eye opening. A good design has a few categories involved. A lot of people think, oh, to design well and to design for tenants and things like that, they just need to, you know, put green here and a plant here and things like that. And it's just so much more than that. It's, you know, for example, it's about planning your space as well, so people can use it really well, and people feel like they've got enough space, they've got enough enough movement within the space, and everything flows correctly. So the zones that you have within your house flow correctly. And then it goes kind of down to the colours and the finishes that you have that may make the person or the human being feel calm, collected in different locations. For example, behind your bed, having a darker colour is actually really, really nice because as humans, we have this kind of a calm cave effect where we want to kind of come into ourselves and we can come into ourselves in the dark, but actually our viewpoint, we want to actually be looking at something that's nice, light and airy and bright. And then kind of like taking bright rooms and adding darkness to it is available, but you actually have to know where the sun rises and the sun sets. And so there's quite a lot to do with having good design and considered design and having healthy design. So we call it something, we call our homes healthy, happy homes, because the way we design, we'd like the tenant to feel healthy and happy rather than just kind of one or the other. So there's a lot of consideration that go into it.
Yeah, definitely. I think as well, from my perspective, we have a saying that was passed to us from our lecturer at university, that everything is a design opportunity. And we think just rings so true with us. Like, you know, there's no design. It's either good or it's bad. There's no like, you know what, I just won't design this one. And I'll go down the middle in the no design section. Like, it's good or bad. There's a one or the other. Yeah. So everything is a design opportunity in that, you know, to make things the best possible that they can be and to really think.
Amazing. I mean, you know what good design is to me, guys? Having plug sockets by beds. The amount of hotels that don't have that, it's ridiculous.
I don't know what the new trend is with hotels about lights on ceilings anymore, and why they just have a load of lamps around the room that you've got to run around them all and turn off.
I don't know
where that's come from, because that drives me mad as well.
And it's all dull, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's great.
They just want you to sleep.
It's all dull. It's not good for content. Yeah, exactly. Just go to sleep. No content, just sleep.
Definitely.
Mary, one thing I kind of got from what you said, though, by the way, I've written it down, is three Fs. So form, function, and flow. I think that's what I would maybe, if I, like my it, takeaway like from what you just it. Said there was.
Thanks but, for
which is great.
Thanks for aligning that for me. I'm going to use that now. Yeah.
Great. And also, guys, look, I think sometimes, especially, you know, again, my end, you know, like say if I've got a client and they've had tax advice, but it may not work for the mortgage side of things. I think if I was to put that in your part of the world, you could have an architect who perhaps the design thing doesn't work with, or they don't kind of communicate together. So does it work better? I mean, I suppose it does. I guess I'm asking you to maybe elaborate on what the benefit is of having a team like yourselves that can do the design and the architecture at the same time.
Definitely. We've had clients come to us who have said, you know, look, I've worked in the past with an architect and then I've worked with an interior designer, and they like the fact that we offer both the services, because you don't have that back and forth then, and there's no kind of gap in the middle where one person thinks the other one should be picking it up and the other person thinks they're picking it up. When we obviously are making changes, so at the minute we're just adjusting a layout for a property from a client based on some comments, and we can feed that straight into the interior design and they will get that full package and service back. So yeah, all the continuity is there when we're thinking about the layout, we're thinking about how it's going to work from a interior design perspective, and it's just become one collaborative piece, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's really because we are investors ourselves, and frugal investors at that, because all investors are frugal, let's face it. I think all our clients find it so refreshing when we're trying to save them money all the time. And because, you know, we're out there all the time doing our own properties, our own HMOs, and now, you know, development stuff. So, you know, we're out there doing it. So we kind of have the same mentality towards the projects that we do for the investors as well. And we try to again as well, because we do the lettings, you know, we have every day there's feedback every day, you know, my tenant's saying, oh, actually, you know, maybe we could have another fridge here, maybe we can do this, and I can have a little bit more storage. So we get so much feedback on a daily basis on what tenants want and need and on site and everything like that. So feeding that back to the clients, I think, just kind of it makes the process really easy for them as well.
Yeah. I imagine as well, like you say, because you also invest, like you just said, that also helped because you've got a holistic view of the end to end, and also from the investor's point of view, you can kind of cover all bases there. So when people are then looking, so I'm an investor, I want to start picking my team, I need a broker, I need an accountant, I need a designer, I need an architect. How should people perhaps look to start building their teams? We've already mentioned communities and social media, but what do you think would be the best way to perhaps get that done?
I always think word of mouth or referral is the place to go and speak to people who have actually utilize those services. We get a lot of people who are referred, you know, they've come out of the blue, like they don't follow us on our social media and they've heard of us before, but they come to us and work with us straight away because they've had that strong recommendation from somebody that they know and trust. So I think that's always a good starting point. But then just not just with us, obviously, like we've alluded to, we also invest and we specialize in HMOs and things like that. It's about what does that specific broker do? Do they specialize in a specific type of finance? And same with accountants and solicitors and things like that. And we have multiple solicitors, ones that we use for our buying our HMOs, ones that we use for our development projects. You know, it's about finding the people who have the correct skill set for that specific project or strategy that you are looking to do.
Would the fact that your broker sends you brownies, I'm referring to Sam Lowney, Mary Oaks Finance, would that be a kind of a swing vote on that?
I cannot confirm or deny whether or not that has influenced our decision.
I love Sam.
I know, we do. I guess, again, it goes back to the communities that you have around you, and we met Sam around like in a community, in a mastermind, and we got to know him personally, and that's what happens. So you get to know, when you're in the communities, when you're part of these masterminds and things like that, you really get to know over the 12 months, you really get to know somebody. So kind of you understand what they're like, you gain their trust, then you know what they're working on, etc. So, you know, the communities and the networks that you are around and you hang around, just getting to know the people, there's just so much
Absolutely.
Skill out and there.
I'm just going to give Sam some props here. He may not even listen to this podcast, but I think it's very rare to find a broker who is, I think, has an abundance mindset, in the sense of he is also a broker, so technically we might be in competition, but he's invited me on his podcast and it was great. He then asked me to speak at an event that he sponsors, and I'm speaking again in February. And it's like, that's just so nice, you know, because he actually genuinely is a nice guy. So props to Sam.
Yeah, absolutely. And
Mr. Sunshine State of Mind is Sam. He's always looking at the positive.
Thanks. Yeah. With your property investing, so what is your chosen strategy? Is it HMOs or do you do different bits or?
Yeah, so the main bulk of what Elite Dwellings does is HMOs. That's our core strategy in and around Leeds. We've got a nice little portfolio and we're continuing to grow that. So we've got two offers accepted going just before Christmas that are just starting to go through conveyancing, hopefully a third one not far behind. So continuing to grow that this year. Yeah. And then we also have another business called Four Space, which is a development company, which is with some JV partners that we know. And so that's hopefully going to be taking off this year as well. We've got an offer accepted subject to planning on a pub to convert into houses, and a new build block of 17 apartments out the ground as well. So that's already got planning permission and everything. So that should hopefully get started in the maybe Q2 of this year.
That's, That's amazing. I think, Mary, I mentioned to you when I saw you at the Property Awards, Leeds is like my favourite city in the UK. It's so nice. Like, I'm glad you invest in Leeds.
I know, yeah. You have connections. You went to uni here, or you have connections here?
No, I actually worked in Leeds for 6 months when I had a job. Yeah. They sent us to Leeds. But listen, this is like anyone listening who's in a job, these are red flag moments. When they send you away, like to Leeds or anywhere for 6 months to train other people, it means they're taking your jobs away, because that's what happened in the end.
Right, good. I appreciate the kind words about Leeds, Shaz, but keep on the down low. Everyone's too busy with investing in Manchester. No one's over.
Yeah, no, Leeds is terrible, guys. Leeds is terrible. So I like asking this question just to get an idea of kind of how adventurous people are. This is a very wordy question, very Stephen Bartlett. But anyway, when was the last time that you did something for the first time?
Oh, wow, what a question. Yeah, that's a toughie, isn't it? A personal anything.
Anything?
Yeah.
I spent Christmas with Mary's family on... for the first time.
With 30 other
really?
People.
Really? Was that the first time?
Yeah, first time. It was meant to be the first time last year, but the year before, but Mary got COVID and we ended up, that was the first time we had Christmas alone in the flat, just the two of us. So that was the first time for that. And then first time with your family this year, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know
if it's an adventure. I mean, we obviously do first times in lots of different countries all the time. but I tell you what, it's going to be a first time in April. It's going to be first time we go on a cruise.
That's nice.
So Andrew left his day job middle of last year.
Yeah.
And to celebrate his retirement, we will be taking a cruise. It's actually quite tactical because we need to hit 13 countries a year. On the Caribbean cruise, we hit eight countries.
I love that. You've planned this out so well. So you're going to take eight countries off. Amazing. Yeah.
You went to the House of Lords for the first time in the last year.
I did, yes.
And adventurous.
I did, yeah.
There you go.
That was great.
What
was the Savoy's, wasn't it?
That was
mine. Nice. Mine's been a few months, to be honest, guys. But mine was, I did some remote via Zoom. I did like a yoga session, so remote yoga through Zoom. I've never done it before.
Oh, wow. Was that successful?
It was a one-off. So yeah, it was all right. I wouldn't do it again because I'm not that flexible. But like, it was good fun. I think I'm meant to be trying my first CrossFit class next week or the week after. We'll see how that pans out.
Good luck.
I haven't got the knees for it, though. Those CrossFit guys are really brutal, aren't they?
They're really brutal, yeah. I hope that's on Zoom and so you can fake it.
I'll document the whole day, guys. I'll document the whole day.
Well, that's what you meant. We can all watch. That's what I thought you were going.
live stream my destruction of my knees, yeah. Guys, do you have your phones to hand, please?
Yes.
We do.
Okay. Can you open up Instagram? You don't have to show me, but open up Instagram. Oh, do you have your own accounts that no one knows about, like your personal accounts?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, open those up. Again, you don't have to show me. It's just more for a thing. And when you're ready, if you click on the Explore page.
Yeah.
Have a look at the Explore page and tell us what's on there, because I would argue the algorithm knows you better than you think.
I could have told you mine without even needing to click on it. So mine is memes of Grogu from The Mandalorian, if for people who have Star Wars.
Okay. Like Star Wars, yeah.
Cats and
cats.
Things to do with rocket launches or SpaceX.
Nice.
Yeah.
Variety.
I've got, and again, this is on a, you know, people probably know this, I've got a lot of Harry Potter memes.
Harry Potter memes?
Look, we're in
okay,
Nathurst.
Anything else?
We grew up with Harry Potter. and quite a few. So my background, I'm Afghan, and I've got quite a lot of Afghan traditional folk dresses on there as well. Yeah, it's those two, and then Jay Shetty.
Jay Shetty, of course, Jay Shetty. Let me have a look at mine a second.
I don't know if my Instagram's heard us as well, because there's some guy doing CrossFit on mine as well.
Yeah,
but
there is.
Yeah. Oh my God, mate. It's always the algorithm's always listening. I've got a lot of Shah Rukh Khan, the Indian actor.
Oh, I love him. Yeah.
He's a living legend. I've got a lot of stuff around content creation and how to use your cameras and lenses, because I'm into that kind of stuff. And lastly, I've got a lot of Drake, because Drake is the soundtrack to my life.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have a look at the business one and see what comes up on there.
It'd be interesting, yeah.
It's interiors. A building collapsing.
Yes, I don't know why that's on there, but lots of interior design stuff. And then Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez for some reason. I'm not sure how or why they've got in there, but yeah, lots of interior design and a building collapsing.
Interesting. But I always find that an interesting experiment. Once a week or once every fortnight, just to check what the algorithm thinks it wants to feed you.
Yeah.
Mary, you mentioned your background is from Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Does that, does that inform any of your design choices?
To some extent, yes, it does. So what was interesting when we were at university is that we got taught to forget our what we call a myopic view. So we always think in a certain way. And when you enter a site, a city, a building or anything like that, to kind of remove all your past understandings and actually think of it as a clean slate and design on a clean slate. So kind of having the background that I do, I always try to remove all the kind of previous preconceptions really that you have of something. Oh, I just want to design, put green and blue on a wall or something like that. You remove all of that and you actually think, okay, what does this space, this site need and what do the clients and the end users need before kind of I dig in and work in here. So, and that's different.
I think, again, this isn't my space, so I might sound like a total newbie here. I guess from what you've said, then yeah, you're very client centric in the sense of the client comes to you, they kind of give you the ideas what they want, and then you design around that. Versus perhaps what you could be doing is kind of you could have your own design language, and someone comes to you because of that. Is that another way that could work? Or
I think so. I think we do have an underlying. Yeah. Kind of style that people are drawn to, but yes, we always listen to the client, what they want, what their brand is, what their kind of personality is that they're trying to get out into their projects, and who their end user is going to be, and design in a way that suits that. And like, yes, we obviously will input our expertise and knowledge when we think that something could be better or different or maximised, but we do generally listen to our clients, don't we?
Yeah,
and I think design for what they need and require.
I think just because we're architects, that's what we've been taught. In the years of experience that we have, that's what we know best. Rather than having our own view, you have to look at everything that's encompassing.
Absolutely, absolutely, and. So guys, look, when someone does approach you to be a potential client, what information or figures or things do they need, may perhaps need to have to hand to be an ideal client and to be proceedable? What would you want to have ready?
You wouldn't believe me when I say this, but it happens. People who just come and go, I've got this building, what can I do with it? And it's ever endless amounts of things. It's better to have constraints and to have, no one actually really wants a blank piece of paper to work from, because you the constraints of what inform things and make the challenge and start to form what the end result is. So we generally need a, you know, some form of steer that it's going to be a HMO, and you know, and there's usually a financial number behind the back of it. So I need I need 6 bedrooms. I want it to be a 7 so I can get too generous and potentially get a commercial valuation on it, or I need X number of apartments if in this, you know, in the commercial conversion. So, you know, some form of kind of like brief and a bit of a steer in the right direction of, I want it to be apartments. I need a minimum of 3, but let me know if you can fit more in, type of thing. As well, we get clients who flick us a right move link and say, can you draw me some plans? And, you know, there's, again, no brief, that type of thing. So, yeah, kind of, we do all our work remotely. That's part of our service and what makes us, we're basically at our desk designing. We're not out and about. And so we're much more efficient with our time and can get things turned around quicker and more cost effective and things like that. So a measured survey of a building, a steer of what you need from the building, a video and some photographs, and that's more than enough for us to get cracked on and
run with that.
Yeah.
And do you often get people asking for, I wouldn't say freebies, but perhaps a case of, look, we won't pay you until you show us what you can do, but by that point you've done the work because you've done the design. Like, how does that work in terms of getting paid?
Think we have, to be honest. It's maybe a bit more like, oh, can we have like an hour of your time and run through all the possibilities of this project, type thing, and more than so much, oh, we want you to do this for free and prove yourself, type thing. We haven't had any instances like that.
Yeah, no, it's been good.
Because people know you're a big deal, that's why, Andrew. guys, 2024, we're what, 11 days in. So, networking events, what's on your diary that perhaps you think people should attend? I know you do a lot of stuff with, I say a lot, I mean, you do stuff with Safe in terms of his site days and then some of the communities you're involved with, but maybe more open networking events, what's on your list?
Yeah, Safe's a really good friend. We've known him for years and we work with him on his projects, and so we're always involved with each other's stuff. We do. Yeah. We have our own little kind of masterminds together where we catch up every quarter, every 6 months or so, and touch base with each other and see what we're up to. So we've got those little things, and we're hoping to run some more of our own open days this year. We had one last year which was a really successful, so hopefully we can do that again when we start to get onto site with some of our projects. Mm-hmm. But you were in the last year, were here, there and everywhere at all the networking events.
I was down
social
south,
butterfly this one
south, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Anything I get an invite to, Shaz, I will attend. Something glamorous, even better.
Absolutely. So you want the fancy glam stuff? It's weird. Like, I obviously had a point or a phase where I was at every single event, and that's how the Where's Shaz thing kind of happened. But now I'm just like, do I need to travel? Do I need to go there really? What's the benefit? Am I, you know? And it's a tough one because if you're not visible, so if I took 3 months out of events, I'm not visible, people do forget. But then it's just it's hard work showing up and being all happy all the time. And I am happy, I am pleasant, but it's a case of, it's a lot of energy that drains out you, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, I can agree with what you're saying there. And I remember someone else saying a similar thing, that they just couldn't do it anymore, traveling all over the country, and had to be more specific. And it's not just the energy, is the time as well. Okay, you might be efficient working on the train, but you never quite as efficient perhaps on the desk. So there's that side of things out of it as well. We've not heard about many events. I'm speaking at an event in March. We've not had many invites yet this year, so
beginning of the year. We tend to do maybe an event a month, I think, that. Other than the kind of our own masterminds and things like that we attend. So for the public ones, maybe an event a month that we can get to. And because we're up north, going down south is a little bit more of a challenge for us. What did Stephen Bartlett say about going to networking events? He said something really
interesting.
Never seen a networking event ever. He's like,
so I thought his take on that was very short-sighted, because yes, multi-millionaire billionaire Stephen Bartlett probably doesn't need to go to any networking events. However, yes, small, medium business owners and entrepreneurs, they don't need it, but it's definitely very beneficial to be seen at events. I think his take wasn't reflective of the general audience that he has, in my opinion.
No.
I think when he's puts content out, yes, it sees millions of people, but when Instagram's squashing our algorithm and our beautiful piece of content getting seen by 50 people, it's not really having the same impact, is it?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you've got to be clever. So like, let's say Mary, you go to a networking event. The clever thing would be to create content about you going to a networking event. That then becomes 3 reels you can post. So it's distribution of you doing your day-to-day and stuff. Yeah, so I saw that video. I am actually meant to be doing like a reaction to it, but I just can't be bothered. But yeah, interesting. So you mentioned Stephen Bartlett, actually, and Mary, earlier you mentioned Jay Shetty, all kind of big names in the space of, you know, podcasting, self-development and mindset and all this kind of stuff. So are these kind of people that you are consuming to kind of improve yourselves, or what do you do from a self-development perspective?
Yeah, we've always, I think for quite a long time, we've always kind of worked on ourselves, self-development and relationship development as well. You know, we've been together for 13 years and we're business partners as well. We went to uni together, we work together, we live together. So actually developing ourselves as individuals and developing ourselves as partners is really important to us. So Jay Shetty is a really big part of kind of that development, and we went to see him live. We actually saw Stephen Bartlett live as well, didn't we? Yeah. So it's always good to be better. So we do kind of follow them and attend kind of what they put on.
We've been to Tony Robbins in the past, and we've been to other business and personal development coaches and stuff. Some a bit less well known. I listen to Stephen Bartlett's podcast, but I flicker back and I don't listen to every episode. I listen to the ones that grab my attention, and then I flick back and forth between. I'll have a stint of listening to podcasts, and then when I run out, I'll switch on to audiobooks and kind of go back and forth again when I run out of audiobooks or whatnot. I've got a bit fed up and listening to audiobooks, I'll go back to podcasts. But yeah, we're big about the kind of self-development side of things, aren't we?
Yeah.
Love that. I mean, I find I listen to stuff when I'm driving. So if I'm driving to London or Birmingham, that's 2.5 hours I can kill. Get an ebook or a podcast on. Do you find, guys, in the self-development space, someone actually said this to me, and I kind of agree that most people say the same thing, perhaps slightly different ways. So there is no secret sauce. There's no kind of hidden ingredient. But it's a case of finding someone whose delivery or body language or personality that you triggers that emotion in you. Is that fair to say?
100%, 100%. Yeah, I think there's so many. It is absolutely like you say. It's quite similar. No one's saying something new. When you hear it for the first time, you're like, oh my god, this was amazing. And then when you hear it lots of times, you're like, oh yeah, I've heard this before. I know this. But then yeah, it is about, you know, finding that person that resonates with you, that kind of ignites that calm, and you're like, actually, I can listen to this and work with this.
I've been reading, this is the second time reading Naval's book. I don't know how you say his surname, but the Almanac of Naval something, beginning with R. And he talks about how if you want, it's more specific about things like evolution or economics and things like that. He's like, don't go back to the very, very original source, or go back and read like Darwin. Don't read the 21st century version of that's just regurgitating the same thing. And I think you can see that in every field. So if you take books like the Atomic Habits or The Slight Edge, they're both just expanded versions of lessons from Jim Rohn. We've probably got it from somebody else, type thing. So there's always a root source somewhere. Everyone then has a kind of slight variation or kind of regurgitation of it. And I think a lot of people, so Atomic Habits and Slight Edge are very similar books, and some people will swear by Slight Edge, and it's probably because they read that one first And then when they read Atomic Habits, it's like Mary said before, they've already heard all that information, or vice versa. So sometimes it's down to, when do you see it? What point in your life? What order did you see it in? And like you said, the delivery and the message that goes in there, and and who they are.
Absolutely. And you know, the reason that hit me was I've been recently following this guy. He's a sales coach, sales trainer. So think like Grant Cardone, that type of thing. But he's like this late 20s Italian Canadian. He's got this energy, and I'm like, that's the guy I want to listen to, not anyone else. But the message is exactly the same as everyone else.
Nice.
Pardon me. So guys, in terms of Elite Dwellings, as we're kind of just winding up a little bit now, Elite Dwellings, what is the 5-10 kind of your goal? You mentioned around better living, you mentioned your personal kind of aspirations, but as the business, what do you want to be achieving?
We've just come back away. So like I said, just come back from Cyprus. We go away at the beginning of every year, bit of warm weather, and get out of the business and do some big picture planning. So we've just kind of gone through this whole process of, you know, goals for the year and a bit my longer term goals. So yeah, we want to just continue building the HMO portfolio. We've got a bit of an initial target in mind of what size that we would like that to be. But I don't know, to be honest, we'll probably keep going on past it, to be honest. And then looking at bigger developments and kind of developing our blocks of flats with our JV partners. And ideally, again, holding them. The big long-term play is that we want to hold everything that we buy or develop or refurbish or whatnot, and just build up that portfolio, use that as a basis to help us in our goals to travel the world and see every country.
In terms of interiors and architecture, so with Elite, I think we'd like to just improve. Like we say, our healthy, happy homes. We'd like to work with as many investors as possible and kind of ignite the idea that design is more than just, you know, putting some colours on the wall, and it's creating those incredible homes for people that people love to live in. And the more we can do that, the more houses that we can support and help and reinvigorate and give more life to, I think we'd really like that.
And guys, just kind of the last question, but three questions in one. So how can people reach out to you? How can you help them? But also, what help do you need from people maybe who are listening? And is there something that they can help you with?
How can you reach us? Instagram is our usual hangout. So Instagram, Elite Dwellings. But we're also on Facebook at the same handle, YouTube, TikTok. You can find us on any of the platforms or our website, elitedwellings.co.uk, where you can get contact information to email or phone us. In terms of how can we help people, we work with private investors, so we have opportunities available to work with us on our funding and get a great return on your capital. Or we, from a design and kind of more client base, we can help you with anything from feasibilities, studies for what can you potentially do with a project, all the way through architecture, building regs, tender, planning, through to interior design, full end-to-end service for your projects to help you maximise them, and make healthy, happy homes that your tenants are proud to live in. And in terms of how can other people help us, like, share, anything you find useful. And just come and see us if you think we could be helpful to you.
Yeah, reach out to us if you can be helpful to us, and we can be helpful to you. We're always learning.
Yeah.
Open to learn, and also invite Mary to fancy events. Nothing at a hotel lobby, but a fancy event. Mary will be there.
Yeah, the ball gown budget took a hit at the end of last year.
Ball gown budget. Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure. Yeah, add that into your little accounts. Now, guys, absolute pleasure. I appreciate you making the time, and hopefully we'll catch up soon.
Thank you so much for having us, Shaz. Really appreciate it.
So what did you think of that? Please do leave a review on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars, of course, and also connect with me on socials at Where's Shaz. Until next time, be humble, be grateful, be peaceful.